Overdose from prescription pain drugs is the second leading cause of accidental death in America. Only car accidents are more deadly. What's the best way to safely prescribe drugs like OxyContin, fentanyl, and methadone? Washington state lawmakers are developing one solution, and it's one that doctors all across the country could look to as a model, perhaps. Barry Meyer joins us. He wrote the article in today's New York Times, and he also wrote a book on the rise of OxyContin called Painkiller. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
We're also joined by Joel Saper. He runs a clinic in Ann Arbor, Michigan that treats patients with severe headache pain. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what we're really talking about is a relatively surprising statistic. I would imagine that people who are not aware of the problem with prescription painkillers would be surprised to hear that it's second in terms of accidental cause of death, only to car crashes. So Barry, what is going on here? Why such a big problem with prescription pain medication?
Well, prescription pain drugs have kind of taken the place of illicit drugs in the drug abuse market. But the issue that today's article tried to grapple with, and one that's emerging, is the question of how valuable are these drugs for pain patients? We know they work very, very well for some pain patients, but there's also growing concern that other patients aren't benefiting from them and are suffering side effects from them.
Well, Joel, let me put that question to you. A prescribing pain medication isn't as simple as it seems. I mean, sometimes it can be very difficult to decide for a doctor what kind of pain medication to prescribe and how much, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, and I think we ought to distinguish between acute pain, such as pain after surgery and trauma, and chronic pain, which is a continuing, prolonged episode of pain, which may last a lifetime. And in fact, you mentioned about deaths exceeding car deaths second only to car accidents. I believe in three states, opioid deaths exceed automobile deaths. So it's a major public health problem. And I think that physicians have gone from being overly restrictive 25 or 30 years ago and not using opioids at all, which was inappropriate, particularly for acute pain, to over-prescribing for anybody, to anybody who hurts. And that's simply an unsavory commentary on our use of drugs these days.
Well, Barry, that is exactly what has led Washington State to create these binding guidelines for doctors. First, tell me a little bit about the guidelines and then explain why they've made them binding and not voluntary.
Well, the guidelines are being developed, so we don't know the exact shape that they're going to take. But essentially what Washington State has asked a panel of doctors, nurses, druggists, and other people involved in healthcare to come up with is sort of a criteria at which a patient will be referred to a specialist for treatment if they fail to improve on ever-escalating doses of a narcotic painkiller. And basically what has brought it about is the realization, as Dr. Saper pointed out, is that these drugs are being increasingly prescribed to people with chronic, long-lasting pain situations without clear evidence that they work for some of these patients.
Well, but Dr. Saper, if the patients, if there was absolutely no abuse of these prescriptions or these drugs, if they were used exactly as prescribed, would we still have this problem?
Well, I believe we would. First, I think that one has to realize that pain is a subjective complaint. Physicians can't prove or disprove the presence of pain. Secondly, there's a whole issue of physician competence and training. It is not a simple matter to prescribe opioids. These are drugs that not only combine with other drugs to suppress respiration, but they are potentially fatal for cardiac, with respect to cardiac function, cardiac arrhythmia, sudden death, and so on and so forth. And many physicians are simply not prepared to safely prescribe these drugs or to combine them with other drugs a patient may have. And so we're not only dealing with setting the need to set up criteria for who gets these drugs, but we also need to set up standards of doctor and physician training in order to prescribe these drugs.
Well, you have said, as I understand, that you feel the problem with prescription painkillers has reached epidemic proportions. Is that correct?
That is correct. And in the field of headache, if I may just insert, in the field of headache, which is what I treat most of the time, We now have strong neuroscience evidence that the chronic use of opioids or these narcotics actually causes progression of the illness, not improvement over time of the illness. And so one is actually promoting the pathology for which these drugs were initially taken by continuing to take the drugs.
And the sad part of that, though, doctor, is that, based on our experience with heroin addiction, a lot of that result is to be expected, the way that the body responds to opioids. I guess my concern here for both of you, Barry and Joel, is that we've created an industry of these opioids. They're commodified drugs that are on the market that can be gotten with or without a prescription at this point. It seems to me the horses are out of the barn completely. Barry?
John, you're absolutely right. And I think what's going on at this point is sort of a gut check. As you probably realize, the FDA voted this week, or a panel of the FDA voted to reject an agency plan under which doctors would get some sort of voluntary training in the use of these drugs. Most of the experts on this panel said, we believe doctors need training on how to use these drugs. So I think there's a broad recognition that the use of these drugs, the quantity in which they're being used, is running way ahead of the evidence or the competency of doctors to use them.
That is Barry Meyer. He wrote the article in today's New York Times, and he's also written a book on the rise of OxyContin called Painkiller. Joel Saper of Ann Arbor, Michigan, let me ask you, when they put voluntary guidelines in place in Washington State, many doctors said they weren't following them. Half of them said they weren't even aware of them. Will voluntary guidelines work, or do we at some point need to establish national binding guidelines?
Well, one would hope that voluntary guidelines work, but unfortunately there's such strong industry promotion as well as authoritative promotion of over-prescribing patterns that voluntary guidelines may not work. I must say very quickly that I was on a panel, a national panel, to write opioid guidelines for several of the major pain societies. And I publicly resigned my position on that panel because the group of physicians, heavily funded, I must say, by the pharmaceutical industry, unfortunately, that the other members of the panel would not support my assertion that we needed to have competence testing as well as criteria for who should get these drugs. So the physicians have become part of the problem by their advocacy, often, I think, blind advocacy and naivete with respect to the hazards and risks of taking these drugs.
Dr. Joel Saper, director of the Michigan Head Pain and Neurological Institute, past president of the American Headache Society and clinical professor of neurology. Thanks to both you and Barry Meyer.
Thank you.
I mean, the question raised there is, are doctors essentially pushers of opioids if they don't have the training?
That's really the issue.
And if the pharmaceutical industry is financing the training and these kinds of seminars, that's amazing. Well, you can weigh in on that. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. And we want you to weigh in on the responses to the injunction against SB 1070 in Arizona. You know how to do that. You can text us at 69866. Text the word START to 69866 and get started on the responses for tomorrow. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headley. This is The Takeaway.